Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest already, huh? What about those websites? JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, FamilyPetAncestry.com is the one that just goes to JackieCation.com because it made me laugh. I'm on AllThingsComedy.com, which is a slash something, The Dork Forest. All Things Comedy is an umbrella group, podcast group that I'm part of. So if you're looking for more pods to listen to, they got them over there. There's also, of course, thedorkforest.bandcamp.com, which has premium episodes. There's probably 10 now, plus a storytelling album that I put together to figure out how to use Bandcamp that has some like 4 stories. Everything's a dollar. And then there is a free album that I put together, which has 17 episodes from the first 200 episodes of The Dork Forest. And that's 17 hours of Dork Forest. From those first 4 years, 4 or 5 years where I recorded it over the phone. So the sound quality isn't as good, but they're kind of interesting guests. And I thought they were fun episodes. So that's a free album over at thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. Other than that, let's do the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang the song you just heard. He sang it with his wife, Sarah Cohen. And Mike will sing his words to the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program. Vilmos does my website, JackieCation.com, and Patrick Brady is going to fix this audio. The website just got revamped, and Vilmos did a great job. The store page, which he put all these great fan art that I have all over it. The store page has all things that you might want to buy. They had Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirts, just Dork Forest t-shirts, my stand-up albums and DVD. And then it's got a trailer for my DVD. If you want to just watch a trailer for the DVD, this will make an excellent Horcrux. You can buy the DVD. You can also just get it downloadable, streamable for $10 from ComedyFilmNerds.com, their downloadable store. And you can get t-shirts. All the t-shirts are union made. The CDs and DVDs are all available for download from Amazon and iTunes and just listenable on Pandora and Spotify. But if you like a hard copy, you want me to sign it, just you can buy it there. The hoodies, you can get a zip hoodie. We're coming into fall here, folks. And if you want a Dork Forest hoodie, I have some in stock. Feel free to email me at jackie@jackiecation.com to double check. Otherwise, I'll have to do an order and it would go on back order. But you can email me anyway. Oh, you can support the show if you don't want stuff. You can just support the show. You can review it on iTunes. You can tell people about it using your mouth hole. Or you can donate. There's a donation button and an Amazon banner. Those are two ways to donate. The Amazon banner is free. You go to the support the show link. And the Amazon banner is just a portal into Amazon. When you order from Amazon, if you use the portal from JackieCation.com, the Dork Forest gets a kickback. It doesn't cost you extra. You just order like normal. And the Dork Forest gets a kickback. Then there's a direct way to donate, which is the donation button. And if you've been thinking about donating, now's the time, I say. What the heck? It is PayPal, a very basic sort of kind of donation button. And whatever you want to give would be great. Super fan status is $100 a year. And that was arbitrarily made up by bands, it turns out. Stand-up comedy. I do stand-up comedy. I'm in Los Angeles for the next week or so. So go to JackieCation.com or at JackieCation on Twitter and Snapchat and Instagram, and you'll find out where I'm doing stand-up comedy in the Los Angeles area this week. All right, let's get into the show. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm back in my living room. You guys, I'm with Jeffrey Golden, who loves Disneyland. Hello, Jeffrey Golden.
Hello, Jackie Cation.
One of the co-founders and publishers, right, mm-hmm. of Devastator Press.
That's exactly
which,
right.
Which was a magazine that made me laugh probably 6 years ago. Maybe 4?
Yeah, a little less than that. We've been publishing for about 6 years, 7 years now.
I feel like I met you on the ground floor. Was it Stereos?
Yes.
Okay.
It still is.
And still contributes?
Yeah, absolutely. He has a book coming out called Toys for Cheap, which is a fake toy catalog, like a fake 80s toy catalog.
I forget that about Devastator Press. You guys are like, yeah, it's a real book, or is it?
And everybody, when they look at our covers online, they're like, the first question is always, is this a real book? Like, did somebody actually make this? And the answer is yes.
Yes, they did.
They are
at
real.
The very least, there are pages with words on them regarding that thing that the cover says it's about.
We should just put, like, Lapsa Opsum, Lapsa Opsum in all of them. Just like, you get this cool cover, and then it's just, the book is just a bunch of filler text.
That's funny. DevastatorPress.com is the publishing company.
That's
and
right.
you're
and the,
at, yep.
And we're the only all-humor, we're the only all-humor publishing company in America. And
really?
That's right. So there's no other, you know, like there'll be publishing companies for detective stories, for mystery stories,
yeah.
and for YA and stuff. There's no all humor imprint. It's just us.
Right.
And our writers are from The Daily Show, The Onion, Adult Swim, some really cool authors. And
we're
sort of like a collective of.
Oh, right. Just a collective of people who want to publish and you were like, please come.
That's right.
And,
come in, come to the big tent.
Big tent. That's my thing about the Dork Forest too. Let there be a big tent. And so it's Jeffrey Golden on Twitter and your name is spelled very fancy with a G.
Yes. GEOFFREY.
And then Golden like Golden.
That's right.
The golden age. And you have written a very silly book
yes.
called Dream It, Screw It.
That's right.
And it's rejected Disney attractions.
Yeah.
Because of your enjoyment of Disneyland.
I love Disneyland. I have always loved Disneyland.
Did you grow up here?
I did not grow up here. I grew up in Buffalo, New York.
That's far away from here.
That's far away from every Disneyland. I actually didn't go to Disneyland until I was in college, I believe. When we were looking, the family was all thinking about moving out here. It was just me.
The whole
sister.
Family?
It was gonna be me, my sister, and my mom. We're all considering it. And then
just
it was
all
just
three
of
you just going, we're doing it.
We're doing it. We're going on a Disney trip. We did it. Yeah. So we went to California, to LA to sort of check out the scene.
Right.
And we went to Disneyland. But we had been to Disney World many, many times.
Oh, really? As a child?
Yes.
Because East Coast, I suppose.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. I'm from the Midwest, so we went to like Six Flags.
Right.
And
we had the Six Flags too. We had Six Flags Darien Lake in, which is about an hour away. It was a class trip.
That was the one. I was in marching band. We went every year for in high school. It was called Marriott's Great Adventure. And then Six Flags bought it and put a death rattle into every different ride. Previously, it was a perfectly safe place. Marriott's was great.
That's crazy that they made it less safe.
Everything felt less safe when Six Flags took it over. Marriott's was, we would march because we had our, and it was crazy because we had wool uniforms. I don't understand why they give high school students, I mean, granted, we also did the football games, but.
Right.
I suppose that's why. Whatever. It's a fascinating story.
Couldn't they have had summer uniforms and...
Oh, no. Public school. Public school.
Right. Yeah, so. Yeah. Me too.
Mm-hmm,
Our unsafe theme park was called Fantasy Island in Grand Island. And it was always...
Was it big
year.
Or was it...
No,
or was it recurring?
It was recurring. Every year there'd be some story about somebody who was hurt or injured or died at
it was
Fantasy Island.
Fantasy Island, yeah. That is great. But the one that truly had the death rattle was where I went for, in sixth grade, I was a crossing guard. And our crossing guard field trip was to outside of Milwaukee. There's a little town and it's gone now. Muskego, Wisconsin had, I can't wait to say the name of this place. It's called Dandelion Park.
Dandelion Park.
It's a weed. A dandelion is a weed. And you're like, none of us even blinked. We were like, no, Dandelion Park. Can we go out to Dandelion Park? And I remember my parents, I only went the one time. And my parents were like, yeah, that place doesn't look great.
No. Great. His rides do not seem well maintained.
Yeah, this is a caricature of a toothless carny running flipping a switch here. This is a classic. So do you like rides?
Yes.
Okay.
I love rides. But I love all, what I really dork out over, I guess, more than anything is like the way stories are told with attractions.
Disney is the best at.
Disney is the best. That's why, like, the other day I was on a podcast, Two Juice Talking. It's a really funny show. Oh. And,
By the way, I didn't even tell anybody about your, I'm going to interrupt your story.
Yes, please.
To tell them about Two Packs a Week.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes.
Because you have your own damn podcast.
I do have a podcast. Yeah, Two Packs a Week, TWO Packs a Week. It's on iTunes. It's a comedy show where I open up packs of weird retro trading cards with comedians.
Yeah. So that's moments of family fun right there. So
it's not family fun. Every single episode is like is E explicit in iTunes. We talk about some effed up shiz on the show.
Anyway, but you were on another podcast talking about rides. I'm sorry to have interrupted that story.
Oh yeah, and we were talking about our favorite types of theme parks, and one of the hosts was like, "Well, I'm not really into Disney. I'm really more into like Six Flags or because I want to go fast. Yeah. I want the fastest ride, the craziest ride." And for me, it's all about the story. It's all about the stuff surrounding the ride.
Me too.
Yeah. Are you the same way? Okay, I love that.
Like, I'll go on your weird Superman death ride. I don't want to, but I'll do it once.
Right.
And then, but I would rather go and see the story of a, you know.
Yeah, I wanna have there be a video at first while I'm in line.
With the hour-long ride, the fact that they make it interesting.
That's right. That's exactly right. No, I want it to be an experience. I think that's what Disney pioneered. Which is the idea that, like, you are basically the protagonist in this adventure. Right. Right.
You get to be in the movie or the ride movie.
That's exactly
And then you're going to get in the ship and then things are going to go south. Like Indiana Jones.
Oh, I love Indiana. Indiana Jones is, I think, a wonderful attraction. Love that ride. You got the video that tells you that there's a curse that you're going to experience. As soon as you hear the word curse, that should be a red flag for you to turn around. You do not turn around.
You do not turn around, even though that guy tells you to turn around.
One of the things I love is on the ride key. Do you ever pull the rope? There's this like area where it's like a well. I guess it's like an expedition into this temple, and there's like a rope in line, and you're meant to pull at the rope. And when you pull at the rope, every so often you'll hear like a noise that sounds like somebody died. that you must have pulled like the rope that of the scaffolding that someone was on, and some archaeologist like jumped up to the grave.
This is in the Indiana Jones ride.
Because
I know that there's three different doors that you end up going through. You end up going to something that may or may not be, you know.
Yeah.
They're different? Are the rides different?
That's a good question. I think maybe slight differences.
Because it's always the bridge.
Right.
And it's always the giant ball.
They always hit you with the same big things. I think there's just some little things about the way, like the ride, you know, like the experience slightly differs.
Right, right.
But it's, I've never noticed it. I have like paid attention to it. And I can't like tell you like, if I felt like this one was more extreme than this one.
I hope they go to the right.
Yeah.
Or I hope they go to the middle. I never. When some people do, like I think somebody, I remember someone going, well, I went to the left last time. I suppose if you went on the ride three times, you'd want to go in each door.
Right.
But I don't think the line was always too long.
It's true. Indiana Jones has always got the line. You got to fast pass that one.
Fast pass it.
That's a fast passer.
Exactly. Now explain the fast pass.
Oh, yes. The fast pass is what you do at Disney. And I was around when it was invented. That was my prime Disney going years.
Those were the years when it first instituted it.
When they first instituted it. So you go into a little kiosk and you put your ticket in. You put your entry ticket in. And it spews out a little, like a ticket that says, an extra little pass that says, hey, come back between the hours of 5 and 6 o'clock and you can use the fast pass lane. And there's less people in that line.
And you could just sort of plan ahead to that time so that you don't have to stand in line for an hour now. You can stand in line for 25 minutes later.
And we loved it. Our family were super big, like planning Disney family. So we were reading all the strategy guides.
Oh, really?
All the advice books on like how to navigate the parks.
Did you do that for Disney World too?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. We started at Disney World, doing it for Disney World.
Wow.
We were very organized. It was part of our pride. We never watched a parade.
That was a thing? Family rule.
Family rule. We never watch a parade because when the parades come out, half the park is watching the parade and all the lines are good. You can go get onto things much faster when there's a parade.
You're thinking ahead. You're like, how? How can I get on this ride in 15 minutes instead of an hour 15?
I know. You got to game it. You got to game the system.
Who doesn't want to game? Andy Ashcraft, my husband, wants to game. He's like, well, there's probably a game mechanic that they've instituted that they want us to use.
Right.
So
and if you're smart. If you're clever.
And if you don't have tiny kids, you don't need the parade.
Right.
Because
right.
I remember my brother, and I've probably told this story before because I've had other fans of Disney on, is my brother Phil took his kids, and my niece was probably 8, and she wanted a signature of Snow White. So she went on a ride, and he stood in line and got the signature. And
but isn't the act of the kid meeting them?
I thought Maya wanted to meet Snow White,
right.
But Phil came back with the signature going, you know, I could have just signed this. It was just a woman.
It wasn't the real Snow White.
Son of a gun. You can swear if you want.
Oh, great. Son of a bitch.
Exactly. Fucking A. And So you walk in to, I've been to Disney World once.
Yes.
And one of the things that blew me away was that storytelling experience of the animal park.
Right.
Part of
Animal
it,
Kingdom. Yeah.
Where they actually decorated the cages of the animals in the countries that the animals came from.
Right.
It was like an ancient Buddhist temple ruin, and then there was a tiger.
Right.
And
right.
I was like, all right, well, is the tiger excited about this? I certainly am.
Right. That's you're who it's meant for. Although I'm sure the tiger likes to have a little more space than you
which
normally
they do.
Have.
They do, and they're pretty. They're bigger, which is nice.
Yes,
because there's nothing sadder than a zoo that's got a creepy cage.
Animal Kingdom is one of the ones I know the least about. I was only there one time when it was first opened, which was apparently the worst time to go to Animal Kingdom.
Oh right, because they hadn't shined it up right.
Right. They didn't. First of all, one thing about Animal Kingdom that's horrible is that it's always like 20 degrees hotter than everywhere else in the park. And this is like Central Florida. Central Florida isn't known for being
cool
like
ever.
Right. Isn't like known for being cool.
Wow.
But it's sort of like how the valley is always hotter than LA.
Right.
It's
except
like,
for in the shadow of the and that's because the Hollywood sign just shades on the rest of Hollywood.
That's right. Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the ocean.
And we live in pleasant Hollywood sign shade. But there wasn't very much, and a lot of like the best like rides and things that are at Animal Kingdom were at Animal Kingdom at that time were also available elsewhere. Like you could also get like the Bug's Life, like Tree of Life, like that's other places as well. Like you can get that in California.
Wow.
Well. Yeah.
Okay.
So
what's your favorite thing about the world though? Disney World.
Oh, my favorite park is Epcot. For sure. And that's my favorite park in all Disney parks. I love Epcot. Always have, always will.
That's not, then the castle's not there. It's the round thing, right?
That's the round thing. Yeah, Spaceship Earth. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, it was like this. So one thing I love about it is it's like corporate optimism. Like
nice,
yeah. That's what it. That's really what Epcot celebrates. And it's I love it. Like there's a part of me that loves it ironically, and there's also a part of me that loves it legitimately.
Well, it also gives you hope because we're surrounded by corporations, and we're like, well, maybe it'll all work out.
Well, at the time, there was a thinking. So Epcot has this weird genesis. It stands for the acronym stands for Experimental People Community of Tomorrow.
And really?
Yes, because it wasn't going to be a theme park. It was going to be a place where people lived, like real people lived. Walt Disney was designing like this is going to be the prototypical like this is going to be the community of the future. That's what we're building right here.
Oh, I could see him totally building Westworld.
Yes.
Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I'm sure Westworld probably had its, they probably knew about this and they were probably some
like,
aspects
that's,
of it.
That's where this is going to go.
That's
Walt.
Where it's heading.
Walt, this is going to tour. It's going to go south. There's going to be trouble.
It's like Jurassic Park, but just without the dinosaurs.
Without the dinosaurs. But instead, animatronics, future tech is going to eat you alive. So.
Well, he died. Before it could be realized. So he designed it and he got the Florida land. There was going to be a Disneyland is going to be Magic Kingdom.
Right.
The fantasy. And then there was going to be this people community of tomorrow. And,
cause everybody wants to live right next to a Disneyland.
You know what? You would be surprised how many people do want to live. Like, I know that's like a funny, that is a funny joke. And most people probably don't, but there are a
lot of
people
who might,
do,
I suppose. Yeah.
People who move from all parts of the country to Southern California, specifically to Anaheim, specifically to live near Disneyland. That's the thing.
I'm sorry. You know what? Now that it's all been said out loud, I am not surprised. I mean, then you could be like, well, then I'll get a yearly pass.
Right.
And then the kids will just go after school and it'll be great. And
or we'll just go, you know, the adults who love Disneyland will go all the time.
And the kids will go and we'll just grow up in the shadow of Magic Mountain or whatever of
my mom was one of those people. She moved to Celebration, which was a town that Disney built near Disneyland, because she worked in Disney for some time. Celebration is sort of what, it was sort of the 90s version of what Epcot was supposed to be.
Okay.
So Epcot is this like crazy futuristic idea. Walt Disney dies, he can never build it, and the idea gets put on the shelf. And Roy Disney goes ahead and starts building on the Florida land. They call it the Florida Project.
Oh, right.
And so Roy Disney calls it Walt Disney World in honor of his memory.
Okay.
But a bunch of these Imagineers who were like, well, we really liked this Epcot thing. It was a pretty cool thing. Like, can we still be talking about it? And there was like a group of them, of Imagineers that would meet like on Sundays. You know, they would have, it's like a Sunday
the
brunch.
The day off, yeah.
The day off. And they'd be like, well, how can we make Epcot a thing? And it morphed into this theme park that was all based on all the ideals that Epcot was supposed to represent. So like the future of communications, the future, you know, the living seas, the future of the oceans, the future of, you know, and then all the countries of the world like coming together very much. I think Walt would have liked it because it was very much in the model of the old, World's Fairs. It
okay.
was built in that.
You know, I don't think I've ever been to Epcot Center.
Oh, it's I love it. It's definitely worth the trip.
Right.
My favorite Epcot though is 80s Epcot. 80s Epcot was the best. Epcot is amazing. I love current Epcot, but 80s Epcot was prime Epcot steak. You just cut that. It's like nice, rare, you know, theme park steak.
Sure. What was so great about, I mean, you're talking about what the Epcot Center was like in the 80s?
Yes, that's right.
How is it different from today or from previously?
So, one thing is, I'll give you an example. The Journey into Imagination, which was a beautiful, wonderful ride in its original conception. They dumbed it down in future iterations. But in its original inception, it was this gorgeous ride. So a Figment, who is a dragon, purple dragon, character.
Okay.
Is your sort of guide along with the Dream Finder, who is this weird hipster guy with a beard. The first thing you see is Figment and the Dream Finder. They're talking and they're coming up with all these crazy ideas, all these cool, crazy ideas. Oh, we're thinking about storms and a cloudy night. And we're thinking about, you know, rainbows and kittens and all kinds of stuff. So now we have all these ideas.
Okay.
You and me and Figment and the Dream Finder, we all collectively have all these ideas.
We're just spitballing.
So we're going to take all these ideas. And for some reason, we're going to put them in the Dream Port. They got to go to the Dream Port.
Okay. Dream Port. Off to the Dream Port.
Where I guess your good dream, where they'll
become real
nicer.
They'll become
figments of your dreams.
Oh,
they'll
okay.
become part of your dreams. I'm assuming.
Okay.
It's been a while, but I'm assuming. So you go through this ride and the ride is just all these like gorgeous.
What's the ride called again?
It's called Journey into Imagination.
Okay.
And so the ride is all of these like amazing, beautifully crafted fantasy worlds of all different types. So you have one room that's like this it's supposed to be like a musical room with all these like crazy like instruments, musical notes, and all these things. There's one room that's supposed to be like, it's like this pristine white like carousel room, and it's like crystal. It's like a crystal room, and Figment is there throughout the whole thing and
explaining stuff.
It's like, wow, this is a numbers are cool, you know, computer world, wow, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just this beautifully constructed story. You know, the story was really simple, and you feel like you have gone through a world of imagination.
Yeah.
They then changed it. They took out the Dreamfinder, which I was okay with.
Okay.
And they added Eric Idle, which I'm very okay with. I love Eric Idle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But nothing wrong with Eric Idle.
But the new ride...
Monty Python, right?
Oh, yeah, Monty Python. There we go. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good for me. Okay.
Not for you. Mm.
No, I never remember anything, so I was patting myself on the back.
Oh, I'm kind of like that, too. Yeah. I also forget a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So the new version of the ride... You are being, like, tested on, like, how imaginative you are by Ooh. Eric Idle and the Dream Institute. But then Figment sort of hijacks the ride midway through and is like... Because the original... So, okay, great. So there are multiple iterations of this ride.
Right.
So they took this ride and Kodak was the sponsor. And I'm guessing... I think the Kodak, like, either they dropped their sponsorship or they were, like, wanted to pay less or whatever for right. the ride maintenance. And so they trimmed it back. They made the ride just about, like, testing your imagination
okay.
abilities. So it's, like, a lot of, like, illusions. So you'd see, like, a butterfly in a cage. You'd see, like, an empty cage. And then you would, like, the cart would move. And then you would see, like, oh, there's a butterfly in that cage.
Okay.
It was, like, a lot of, like, tricks. But it didn't. It was considerably less imaginative than the original. ironically,
right?
And then the Friends of Figment online fan group complained bitterly, and they protested the ride, and they were very upset. And so, eventually, they sort of did a half and half, where like. At first, you're being tested on your imagination, and then Figment sort of hijacks the ride.
Okay.
And then it becomes some of the magic of the previous ride is, like, reinserted. But
okay.
That original conception was it just
to encourage imagination or just to go,
yeah.
This is Figment's crazy imagination. No, do you think it's cool?
I think the idea was to encourage the person to be more imaginative.
Yeah.
And I can understand the Imagineers wanting to make it more about the viewer, like more about the riders. You know? Like it's like a journey, because they called it Journey into Your Imagination.
Right. So they wanted more interactive.
They wanted
somehow.
It to be more interactive, yeah. feel more interactive. But I felt like the original, I think, was more inspiring.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It sounds like it.
That's what was cool.
It was less of a test.
It was less of a test. Yeah. I know. I don't go to Disney to be tested.
Exactly.
The other part of it, too, was they had this upstairs area in the original Journey into Imagination. And they still have like an area, like an interactive playroom kind of area. But the original one, it was amazing. They had like a thing where you could act in like a video, like a green screen video.
Oh, wow.
They had a rainbow tunnel. The best thing was this rainbow tunnel. It was just a mess. There's one in an airport. I think it's Chicago. It like between like terminals you can go. It's sort of similar to it. Maybe you've seen it before.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it's O'Hare. It might be O'Hare. Yeah,
it might be O'Hare.
Part of Denver or Dallas? Or
yeah.
It's a big one.
It's a
like,
big airport.
It's not Atlanta.
Right.
It's not Who cares? Atlanta. Anyway.
It's this like rainbow tunnel.
Yeah.
So you're walking through and it's just all these different
lights.
Lights of different colors. And like, yeah, your synapses are lighting up when you're riding this thing. And when you're going through and doing
it's
these
just a car, by the way. So it's a car going through to these different worlds or?
No. This was, so the ride part is like you're like in a cart.
Yeah.
Like in a cart going through the different, these different rooms with different, and then there's also this like upstairs, like interactive area where you can just play. You can play.
Oh,
you
nice. Play.
Yeah. And it was amazing. I mean.
Did they get rid of that part?
They did and they didn't. They got rid of that part, but then they added a new version of it.
Okay.
With some of the features of the old. That was the thing. It's like it has some of the features of the old, but it's not quite the same.
Right, because they're just trying to twist. They're trying to tweak it to make it better and
more digital and more. You know, it's like
because sometimes the tech is it moves so fast.
Right.
And I remember when I was a kid, the Wisconsin Dells had a. It's a beautiful. Boat ride up and down to see these beautiful dells on the Wisconsin River.
When you say dells, you're referring to the computer, the personal computer,
no,
right?
No, I am
you're
not. I'm talking
see
about
a ride where you see all these
It's a rock formation on the either side of and it is very pretty, but there was like water parks and all these things, these destination things, and one of them in the 70s was called the Foam House of Tomorrow.
The Foam House of Tomorrow.
It was when we were all going to live in styrofoam, because right. that seemed effective. And and so, and they knocked it down. They took it down. And, like, it was too bad, really, because it was such a joke thing to go look at when I was in college. Like, I think in the 90s they took it down. It right. was there for 20 years. And then finally everyone was like, yeah, we're never living in styrofoam. It's not happening. And but you could tour it, and it was – and some people regret that they tore it down. And I'm like – no, there's pictures. It's good. It's a giant foam house. Don't worry about it.
There was a similar thing in Disney. They had like a I believe it was plastic was the main material.
Because that's what we were going to live in.
Right. We're going to live in plastic, you know. And then the book, I make fun of that sort of corporate optimism and sort of poke fun at these different, you know, the way that we thought. But I think the thing that made Epcot in the 80s so cool and so fun was that it was maybe the last gasp of a time in which corporations felt like a civic obligation to the citizenry. And that was what Disney, I think that's what Disney was going for. Like, that's what he felt like he was doing a service to people. Yeah. I think I think a lot of heads of corporations felt that way, that their company wasn't just about taking
that's
money.
Why they think that they're people.
Right.
Is a corporation is a person, so they have a civic responsibility to give back to the society.
Right.
And, well, that actually explains why Richie Rich thinks it he's a person.
Absolutely,
his corporation is a person.
That is Richie Rich in a nutshell. He is the embodiment of this idea of, you know, the philanthropist,
the noblesse oblige kind of. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have all of the money, and right. then what I'm gonna do for you is I'm gonna give you this toy,
right?
And I'll give you a book, and you'll learn things, and it'll and I don't have a huge problem with noblesse oblige. I mean,
no.
It's if it's a choice between that and socialism, right. the one seems more likely, and it can right. be taught. Socialism right. Takes enforcement. So I would like anarchic socialism where everyone chose to share.
Right.
But that also isn't occurring.
It's not, it's not human, necessarily human nature.
Right. But noblesse oblige can be taught.
Right.
Which I think is kind of.
Which is great. And
yeah.
And it can be pressure.
And I'll take it.
Corporations can pressure each other into doing it. And then that's what Epcot, the 80s Epcot sort of embodied. Like every pavilion is like, you know, is like, oh, AT&T's vision of the future. This is what we would like to have. And, you know.
So they're literally corporate pavilions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sponsored by different corporations.
That's exactly right. Every ride was sponsored by a different corporation. So you'd have AT&T sponsored Spaceship Earth. You'd have the various, you know,
like Kentucky Fried Chicken or? Not that bad.
Not that bad.
Because it was supposed to be Tekker or
right. That's right.
Or maybe 3M or Caterpillar or something.
Nestle got in. Yeah, Nestle got in with the land, which was that's an area where it's like food. It's like promoting healthy food choices, and you see like food from different like food categories there. So you have like your grains area.
Okay.
You have your meats area. The idea is to promote healthy eating. Of course, you know, Nestle, we don't necessarily think
right, right.
Of
they're not really rising to the occasion themselves, right. but I love that they were encouraging it.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. And that was the thing when looking back on it, like, that was so cool. And I think it's why so many people really love, this defunct ride called Horizons, which was basically like, it was that, like, to the nth degree. It was, a ride about the future. I'm trying to remember who sponsored Horizons. I don't quite remember, but the idea was, it's just like, this is like the future of everything. This is like the future
oh,
of
horizons,
life.
Right? Because everything's horizons. Okay, that makes sense.
New horizons for you and for me. If we can dream it, then we can do it.
Is that how the song
That's
goes?
How the song goes.
Nice work, Jeffrey Golden.
Oh, one thing you get with my book is you get a lot of parodies of those songs, of the
okay.
ride songs. So if you are a Disney fan, like a super Disney fan, you get... Yeah. You get I make fun of all the different. The
is
different
it
signs.
So? Is it you're it's printing at the end of the month, right?
Oh, it's
and then it's also already on E.
It is It is printed. It is on a slow boat to America. As
oh, there you
speak.
Go. Pokey.
And it is available. It is
as an
ebook. As an ebook, and it comes out to the 28th, September 28th.
Are you gonna do an Audible? You can do an audio version.
We're
of it?
Talking about possibly partnering with someone pretty cool to do an audio version. Knock on wood. So we'll see about that.
You can hope. Dream it. Screw it.
Dream it. Screw it.
Why not?
Yeah. It was fun. As an Imagineering nerd, it was fun to design basically the worst theme park attractions I could come up with.
Right, because what it is your rejected Disney attractions, right? Are they, like, dangerous?
Yes, some of them are dangerous. Some of them are violent. Some of them are sexy.
Right.
Some of them are just impractical.
Are we
So we have, for example.
What's an impractical one?
So one idea that, so the story of the book, it's about Dip Disney, the worst Imagineer in history. He was Walt's cousin. They grew up together as river playing boys.
Oh, great.
In the rivers of Marceline, Missouri. And basically through his connections with Walt, he gets a job for life at Disney Imagineering.
Right.
And he comes up with 7,000 ideas for attractions, none of which are used. And so he, one of the rides is, that he comes up with is the Haunted Mansons. So he proposes what could be scarier than Charles Manson and his family taking up residence
super haunted
at the Haunted Mansion? Yeah. Or one idea is, in terms of impractical, one idea he came up with was the Great Monorail Disaster. So the idea was that every day a different monorail would be picked to start shaking violently as if it were about to crash. And like the announcements would come on and saying like, this is not Disney
drill.
Magic. This is not a drill. Pray to your God. We're about to fall off the track. And then all of a sudden can anybody ride this monorail? And you hear, oh, I can. Yeah. And then Mickey's voice and he like writes the course of the monorail. Then you're off.
That isn't a bad ride at all. I don't mind that ride at all. That sounds like a fun ride.
Maybe at Universal, that would be a good ride.
That would work better at Universal. What's your favorite ride at? Do you have favorite rides right now at Disneyland?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
My favorite currently open attraction, though it probably won't be open for much longer, is Muppet Vision 4D.
You love an underdog, man.
I do love an underdog. Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you why I love it.
Yeah.
So I'm somebody who loves story in rides and how like little details can contribute to the grand story of a ride. Muppet 4D, the waiting area, is so packed with jokes and Muppet references and stuff. It is crazy. I say to you, kind viewer, kind listener, if you go to Disney, just don't even worry about when the next showing of Muppet 4D is. Just walk through the key and just look at all the different little sign gags. The gags on every inch of it is covered with Muppets. I'm also a huge Muppet. I'm also a huge Muppet. And so like the experience of it is truly incredible. You really feel like you are in the Muppet Theater.
Well, it's so weird. Sometimes when the line goes too fast, you can miss all that stuff.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
I as a kid would purposely walk through the rides keys slowly and I would let people
pass. Is the line called the key?
The key.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, You're in the know. Well played. Well played.
I would purposely walk through the key slowly and let people pass me just so I could see these details.
Because
they put in, there's so much work is in the details.
Yeah.
There was a story, one Imagineer, this early on in Disney, like Imagineer, I forget exactly what the circumstances are, so I'm going to make them up slightly.
Go for it.
So let's say there was an Imagineer working on a door frame for attraction.
Okay.
Right? And the Imagineer couldn't find exactly the right doorknob, but found like one that was like pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. And he would tell Walt and be like, I know we wanted this, but you know, this type of doorknob, but this one looks
pretty
close. And it's, you know, it's like, you know, cheaper and it was much easier to procure. We'd really have to spend a lot of money to get the right doorknob for this thing. And Walt would be like, you know, they may not know consciously that it's the wrong doorknob, but something about it will feel off to them.
Right.
Like something about it will feel less than. And he was a perfectionist. He wanted
to
spend
the money.
Spend the money.
Find the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Spend the money.
Spend
the
time.
Right.
Yeah. Do the.
And it's reflected in the Imagineer's work. I mean, you don't go to, you don't make a Disney attraction on the cheap.
No,
like,
no.
No doing that. Like you are spending the money and this is the AAA. This is the best theme park.
It's why they stole it. It's why why Universal does it that way now too. Like I just went to Harry Potter World in Orlando and it was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Detail was gorgeous. And, but a friend of mine who used to be, he was an Imagineer for 27 years.
Oh, wow.
At Disney. And he was the head of, and he used to do stand up. And he, and they laid him off, after 27 years.
Why did they do that?
It doesn't matter, right? Because they got the biggest golden parachute
and tickets
to Disney World forever for the rest of his life, right?
Right, right.
And moments later, I think it was about possibly four or five heartbeats later, Universal Tokyo offered him the head of their entertainment, their amusement park division.
They hire a lot of Disney Imagineers to work at Universal.
So he's worked at this at Universal Tokyo thing for a year now, and he doesn't know how long, because he also got this pension. So he's fine.
Good.
Anyway, but
I'm glad your friend is okay.
Yeah, it's fine. It's all working out for him. And
I mean, a 27-year career at Disney is not.
It's not a career cut tragically short.
No,
yes, it'll be
not.
Fine.
That's a good. He had a good run.
That's a perfectly fine run.
I mean, especially these days, you know, maybe Imagineering is one of the few companies left that has that kind of long-term ethos. Like if you're good, like they'll keep you on. Despite your rising costs of your salary, you know, your salary.
Right, because
increasing.
It is a rising cost thing. And, right. And they, I think that they, from what I've heard, and this is a complete hearsay, and yes. So don't sue me, Disney, even though I'm sure they've got lawyers just waiting, is that if the price does go up, they can hire new young guys who, right. young people. Hopefully women.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Disney, if you
people
could.
Of color.
Yes, anything. Yeah. Get some diversity, people. Yeah. Get a lady. Get a black man. Nobody loves superheroes and monsters more than the disenfranchised. Hire a woman. Hire a Mexican. Do it.
Do it once.
Just try it once.
One
just
time.
One of
See
each.
How it goes.
One of each. So I was reading somewhere. This is a stand-up. This is a I digress, because someone said that, with stand-up shows, they will often book one woman,
right,
or one person of color,
right,
and
diversity.
You know. Instead, and whoever wrote this, I can't remember who it was. I think it was a woman, but I can't remember. She said, "Here's a better theory: make sure that no more than a third of who you're booking is a white dude, and then just fill the rest of it with something else,
right?
And then a third will still be white dudes. I swear to God, that's
right.
Pretty. I mean, two thirds. You got to mix
solid.
Up the rest of the planet into two thirds.
We try with the Devastator. We try pretty hard to keep
to reach out and
keep it diverse, but specifically with male female. You know, that the proportions have always been 50-50 and among our authors, which I think is important. I mean, I think it's important to get a diversity of perspectives in any creative endeavor, because inevitably you run out of ideas. If everybody is the same, you run out of ideas. You run out of perspectives to mine. You know? And that's what, you know, whether it's Imagineering, whether you're coming up with some ingenious mechanic or story idea, whether it's a sitcom where you're mining people's lives to try to come up with new story ideas. It's like, you know, if everybody has the same background and the same education and the same thing,
right,
you're going to eventually run into a point where
you're just snake eating its own tail. You're just boring the hell out of yourselves.
Exactly.
You're like, no, we told that story.
we did that in season 6,
right.
Episode 14.
Someone was, I think an Uber driver. Hello. An Uber driver told me that her daughter watches something on the Disney Channel called Jessie something.
Yes.
And her mom was trying, and she said that this woman was like, you know, and all of these Disney Channel sitcoms are full of really sassy-mouthed kids.
Right.
The kids are sassy-mouthed, mm-hmm. And so I didn't want my daughter. I was like, that's not a trait I'm looking for you to learn.
Right.
So I was like,
help anyone.
Yeah, nobody wants that. And so she turned the kid on to Cheers. Which
right.
She was like, I know it's set in a bar, but it'll be fine. And and so the kid's watching Cheers with her parents.
That's great.
And the kid goes, I know this episode. And they had lifted it entirely for a Jessie episode.
Oh, you want to know?
Like,
beat by beat. Yeah, you want to know why?
Why?
Because a lot of people on that writing staff are 90s sitcom writers.
Oh, right.
It's where 90s sitcom writers go. They go to the Disney Channel.
That's right.
A lot of them. A lot of them.
They need the work.
They need the work.
They
need the work. They know this format. They can do it.
They can knock them out. Yeah.
So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense then.
And so they're doing essentially it's Sam and Diane as 8-year-olds.
Right.
With the snarky comments. And
it was a couple of friends of ours always thought it would be funny to do Taxi for Kids. Like, if you could somehow, make like Taxi for Disney Channel. I don't know how you do. Maybe it's go-karts. Maybe they're caddies or something. I don't know. They're like driving
lemonade stands. Who knows, man? I mean, just like,
but Taxi for Kids, just a group of kids of, you know, different
bikes.
Types and down on their luck, depressed kids, you know, who reach the end of their rope. All
who's the Danny DeVito of 9-year-olds? Oh my God. All right, I want to tell you my favorite ride that is underappreciated, in my opinion, in Disneyland, which is the Rocket Ride.
The Rocket Ride?
You know the Rocket Ride?
Yeah, the Rocket.
It's just Dumbo.
Yeah.
With rockets.
Yeah.
And
great.
It's entirely about the story. It's entirely about the way it looks. And it's entire, because all it is a giant flipping swing. It's a swing.
That's right.
And I'm having the time of my life in that swing.
And you imagine yourself going
in a rocket.
In a rocket. Yeah, going to space. I mean, and that's part of story. And that story too. You know, I always gravitate towards traditional, like, narrative storytelling where they're, like, building this sort of conflict, you know, the videos. But that is as, and maybe more legitimate, which is just, like,
well,
let
it's
the kids imagine.
In a heartbeat.
Spark the writer's imagination. Let them imagine the story that they're up in space, that they're going to Mars, you know.
Yeah.
I love that. I think that's a great choice.
It was, and it's so funny because whenever I go with anyone, I'm like, can we go on the rocket ride? And they're like,
why?
Are you serious? I'm like, I know. I know you want to stand in line for Star Wars for an hour and a half. And I, too, wish to go on the Star Wars ride, but can we go on the rocket ride?
Can we fast pass Star Wars
right.
and get onto the rocket
get
ride?
Get on the rocket ride.
The ride's the wait is 10 minutes.
Exactly.
Get right on it.
Right. It shouldn't take, I swear to God, it won't take more than a half an hour. We get there. And what time do you like to get to Disney? Like, what are the secrets? Are there secrets?
Yeah, there are secrets. I like to, this is, you know, On a really crowded day, on a super crowded day, there's basically nothing you can do.
Right.
Like, on the most crowded of days, like, it's the most crowded of days.
Yes.
Like, you're not, but on days that are, like, medium to light attendance, typically what we'll do for Disneyland or for Magic Kingdom is we'll typically start in the middle kingdoms first. So we'll go to, like, Adventureland or place like that, you know, because...
And then work your way out?
Yeah, work your way out. So we'll typically do, like, Adventureland first, and then we'll go back and do, say, in the early afternoon, we'll do, say, Tomorrowland, you know, but... And Fantasyland will do towards the end of the day because we want
What's
to wait.
What's in Fantasyland?
Fantasyland would be like Peter Pan ride.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because you want...
Teacups?
Teacups would be Fantasyland. Because you want to... Because the kids go to Fantasyland. That's most crowded during the day.
Oh, right.
In the evening, it's generally less crowded, so it's easier to do
Fantasyland. Shrewd move.
This has been my experience. Others may have their own... Their own ideas about what to do. Well, you should take the train to this... You know, this
right,
town,
right.
Do this.
It was, I think, the last time I went with my friend TJ, who we went to college with, just about a month or so ago. And she had never been to California Land.
Right.
So we spent most of the day in California Land, which was fascinating to me because I love the idea of California Land. My favorite thing is that, though they got rid of it. Talk about being sad about getting rid of stuff.
What did they get rid of that you like?
California Adventure is just the swing ride where you get to see the coastline of California. Essentially it flies you 3D over California,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right.
Well, you fly over the orange groves. Mm-hmm. They used to blow an orange mist at you.
Yes, they did.
They took it off.
They did take that off. They changed it to you're soaring around the world, I believe, or soaring around...
California, soaring...
It's more of a... It's more broader now than just California. That was the original conceit of the ride. Yeah, the orange smell is something that people remember from Horizons, too.
Oh, yeah?
This was part of it. They would go... You'd see, like, the hydroponic, like, orange gardens, and then you'd be blasted with this orange smell. And people love it. I loved it. And in our house, we actually got orange... Like soap.
Mist.
Like, always, we'd always get the orange soap because it reminded us of that,
There's
that experience.
Vital work is being done off of exits all over New Jersey to create these smells. And they are tactile. They are memory generators. I'm on board.
Absolutely. That's part of it.
It's a ride.
They also do it. I mean, it's piping smells is something they do quite a bit. Like, they'll also do it in the bakers in Main Street, USA. They'll do the Main Street. they'll do, like, you'll pass, like, a bakery, and it's very clear that it's not just, like, the smells of cookies.
Right. They're not actually making.
No, no.
They're baking.
They're baking, but the smell is coming from a piped smell that is coming, that it's like, you know, sniff, sniff, oh, I want that.
Yes.
I need that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's part of the experience. It brings you into the world.
One of my favorite things to do, and it's, so it's hard sometimes to go to Disneyland with Andy Ashcraft because he doesn't like to overeat.
And I was like, right. That's part of the experience.
It's pretty much what I'm interested in. I'm interested in having weird food at least 3 times a day.
Oh, let me tell you, before I would just have to say, you definitely need to go to Epcot.
Oh yeah,
Epcot has all the different foreign countries.
Oh right,
and they all have restaurants. Every single one of them has a different restaurant. They're delicious. Like. So it's definitely worth going, if nothing for just the cuisine. They also have a food and wine festival that they have every year, too.
Well, 2 years ago, I went to Hong Kong to do stand-up.
Oh, amazing.
And we got free tickets or cheap tickets to go to Hong Kong Disney.
Great.
And so the weirdest thing about Hong Kong Disney, it was fascinating, by the way. They had a Toy Story thing where the guys were dressed as army dudes.
Amazing.
And they,
was it a ride or was it like a parade?
It was like Fantasyland. It was Toy Story Land.
Right.
So the grass was super tall because you were supposed to be the size of toys.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was so amazing. And the rides were pretty good and stuff, but the story was the best part of it, I thought.
Right.
And it was for kids. So they had guys dressed up in, fully dressed up in green paint to look like little army guys.
That's cool.
And marching in formation.
I think I've seen that in the Pixar parade. There's like a Pixar play parade.
Yeah.
That they do. I think I've seen that. It reminds me, it's sort of similar to the Bugs Land in California, but with a movie that I would be more interested in.
that I liked better, much better. But the best thing about Hong Kong Disneyland was the food, because they had like an Indonesian.
Oh,
because I was in Asia, they were like, well, are you Chinese from the mainland or are you Indonesian? Are you Malaysian? Do you need, what do you need? Japanese food? And they literally had played to that. So there was also like corn dogs and hamburgers.
Right. Yeah.
For people who are like, no, I'm at Disneyland.
Right.
And then there was
turkey legs.
And then there was Singapore rice noodle, where you're like, oh my God.
That's so cool.
It was really good.
It's great that you can get those things in a Disney park. It's really
good. It felt much more interesting. And then, so what's your current favorite ride? What are your other favorite? We're coming up here. We're pushing. I don't know.
Are we at the end of the queue almost?
We're about another 10 minutes.
We're about to ride the ride here.
We're coming to the end of the story. What are your favorite? Yeah.
One of my favorite defunct attractions was a ride called Alien Encounter. And it was made because Michael Eisner wanted to have an alien ride at Disney. He thought it would be really cool to have like a scary, like, alien ride. Now, some of the younger Imagineers, like, agreed, like, hey, that would be awesome. It's the 90s. Yeah. That would be awesome.
Let's bring this up a notch. Let's bring this into the 20th century.
That's right. Yeah, let's take Tomorrowland in a whole crazy different direction.
Yeah.
Know? And some of the older Imagineers, of course, were like, this is a horrible idea.
This is not what Disneyland is.
This is not what Disneyland is. And I would argue that they were both right.
Right. It kind of belongs over in California Adventureland.
Yeah. I think it would have done better in a more adult park.
Yes.
So basically the premise of the ride, it was probably the funniest Disney ride. Like, just like, and not like funny in like Disney has its own like cute, like fun.
It's
like
a gentle, it's a gentle comedy. Yeah.
This was satirical. This was a satirical Disney ride. It was very well done.
It was somebody poking your face. Okay.
So
get it?
And it was definitely also like making fun of that sort of corporate optimism, that Epcot is all about.
Wow.
So the premise of it is, this alien company, literally an alien company from outer space called XS Tech has, invented teleportation, and you're going to be, you're going to be witness to a demonstration of teleportation technology.
Okay.
But there's a lot of hints that like this company is pretty nefarious. They do one test with this alien called Skippy, in like an initial round of, and the, animatron, I believe is voiced by, Rocky Horror Picture Show Clue, Why can't I think of his name? Oh, my God.
Someone's yelling at their iPod.
Yeah. No, no, no. Tim.
Burton?
No.
Meadows?
No. Wait. This is crazy.
Robbins?
These are all wonderful Tims. All right. It's going to occur to me. It's like everybody who's listening to this at home is like shouting the name. Like, right.
Are you reading a comic book called Descender at all? Timmy 21? Anyway. No. not him either? Okay.
So the demonstration, this cute little alien called Skippy is like teleported across the room. And we see he's like... Skippy's like burned to a crisp. Oh. Skippy did not fare well in this demonstration, but they're going through with it anyway. Yeah. So the demonstration is supposed to be that the chairman, of XS Tech comes to Earth, right?
Yeah.
Comes to Earth to answer people's questions. But the signal gets crossed over with an alien, they couldn't get the rights to alien, to an alien-esque creature. And suddenly you are in this room, this enclosed space with like a hideous creature that's like banging on the glass and eventually escapes. And that's the ride. The ride.
Disney didn't own the rights to Alien.
No, no, it was in the part of the Great Movie Ride, Alien. They did like a sequence where it was, but they couldn't, for some reason, I don't remember why, the rights
didn't
come through for this. They couldn't use it for this particular attraction. But they went through with it anyway. And the ride, it's, according to what I've read, it was like super thrown together. It was like, it went through like 100 drafts. It was really problematic on a number of levels, but the end result, it was just a fascinating and like amazing bit of like show. It's an incredible show.
It just came out of it had to be fascinating because it didn't kind of fit.
It didn't fit.
Right. What was the name of it?
It was called Alien Encounter.
Encounter.
And then what they did was it went for like a couple of years and then they shut it down because kids were getting too scared.
Right. It was creepy and weird and it didn't fit.
It was for adults. And they replaced it with a Stitch attraction that was similar with the same
mechanic.
You know,
I never saw Lilo and Stitch.
Oh, you never seen it?
Yeah. I understand the movie's adorable.
It's one of my favorite Disney movies for sure. I put it in my top three Disney movies. Maybe it's my favorite. I love Lilo and Stitch.
I might have to just buy that when we hang up.
Yeah, yeah.
When we hang up?
When we hang up? Yeah, we're in the room together.
Yes.
This is the Skype call. The ride is not very good. It's very watered down.
Okay.
Especially if you loved it enough, you'd go.
I need to be anywhere near these characters.
Yeah. I don't know.
What was the ride?
The Stitch version is almost identical. It's the same. They're like, I'm trying to remember. I did it once. He's like being transported to prison, but he doesn't get into prison. Instead, he gets loose, you know? this is not as good as what it was.
Right.
You know? But that was my favorite. The original Alien Encounter was like, I loved it. It was exactly my sensibility in terms of like the satire.
Right.
And you'll see that there's reference to it in Dream of Destruction.
Because you like the regular rides to Indiana Jones and Star Wars and Mountain and Space Mountain and Thunder Road or whatever the heck. We went on Thunder Road. It was actually quite scary. It was, I think, the fastest of the rides.
Thunder Mountain. It's incredibly, it's like...
It's
gotten faster over the years.
It feels almost Six Flags fast. I was like, oh wow, this is a real ride.
This is a real deal. Yeah. We're doing this. Okay.
I didn't make it when we were just there. We didn't make it to the new Star Wars ride, but we ate at the Star Wars cantina essentially, which was just, you know, wall. But I think for dinner I had like a Death by Darth chocolate or something like that. And then there were two drinks. There was a light side and a dark side. And they both came with toys in them, like a glowing Millennium Falcon and a glowing Death Star.
I love the new, what they did with Space Mountain, the overlay that they did of Space Mountain. I actually tend to like overlays.
What does that mean?
So they didn't fundamentally change Space Mountain. They just put a new skin on it. They added videos and music and things to kind of,
the ride's the same. The story changed a little.
Exactly. So like Haunted Mansion becomes like a Nightmare Before Christmas land. That's pretty good. That's like really good.
At Halloween, do they do that?
At Halloween. They do that. Yeah. At Halloween through Christmas, they do that. But the, what's it? We were talking about, oh yeah, so Space Mountain, I love it because what they did with it, Hyperspace Mountain, what they call it now.
Okay.
And they added a ton of Admiral Akbar. It's Admiral Akbar presents Space Mountain because it's supposed to be the battle, I think, in Jedi. I think it's supposed to be that's supposed to be
the dogfight?
Yeah, where Admiral, you know, where it's a trap is.
Oh,
is
right, right. You know? Oh, that's right, yeah.
And so there's videos where Admiral Akbar is like prepping you for this mission.
That's right.
You hear him say, it's a trap. there's Star Wars music. He's like, but Admiral Akbar congratulates you at the end for doing a good job. It's like, it's exactly what I wanted. Like, I wanted an entire theme park attraction
dedicated to Admiral Akbar.
Dedicated to minor character turned internet meme turned like major part of the Star Wars universe now, Admiral Akbar.
Right. Whenever anybody is like, well, do you know, like because I didn't know with Star Wars, I like Star Wars. I love Star Wars.
Yeah.
I don't know the names of the minor characters.
Right.
And Andy explained to me the reason I don't know the names of the minor characters is because I never collected the action figures.
Right.
And because they were all named in action figure land. And then children, that's how they memorized it. And adults.
I know a story about what I heard is that for the minor characters in the prequels, that George Lucas let like his son or grandson, his like young boy, like son, just like name these characters. It's like, okay, what's this one name? This one's name is Mimo. Great. Now it's
excellent. Done.
Okay, done. What's this one's name? Fliplorp. Done. We're done. problem solved.
Right. I'm looking forward to Rogue One.
Yeah. Although I was kind of surprised by the trailer. I think when I heard like Star Wars heist movie, I was kind of imagining like more of an Ocean's 11 style tone. I was, you know what I mean? Like we got like sort of more like a cape, like a fun caper kind
Jeffrey
of
Golden's mind. You're like, yes, the universe is perfect. We don't need to see that. I don't want to see the gunfight. I want to see them. Oh, are they going out to lunch? And then they get hijacked? Let's do that. That's awesome.
I wanted there to be like a demolitions expert, the computer expert, and them all like in the trailer for each of them to be like introduced separately. They're all played by different celebrities. Like that was kind of what I was imagining in my head. So I was
the
like,
weirdest details.
The weirdest details. So I was like, oh, that's a surprise. I'll probably see it though.
It looks fun.
I really liked Force Awakens. Yeah, I thought it was excellent. I thought it was really good.
My brother just called me. He's just seen it. And I was like, wow. Cool. 6 months. Okay. So
what'd you think?
What'd you think? And he was like, it was like they redid the first three movies all in one movie. And I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not the first to
point that out.
And I said, did you like it? He goes, no, it's great. It was perfect.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, well then that's the perfect way to reboot the series as far as I'm concerned.
I would say I really like Force Awakens, but I'll put the asterisk on it, which is that if the next Star Wars movie, the next in the main series is a remake of Empire, then I can go back and restate that I did not like Force Awakens. Because I don't want them to just remake the original movies. I think the thing that I liked about Force Awakens is that it had like the strongest take on family that I've seen. The view of family is a very important part of Star Wars, but it's very much just like father son. It's like, what is this? And it's a very like cut and dry, like very specific dynamic that like the father and son had. Whereas this movie sort of broadened it and talked about like Star Wars dysfunctional family. And I thought that even though a lot of the plot.
Seriously, dysfunctional family.
Absolutely.
The only thing that I would have liked, and I thoroughly enjoyed the film, was that, if Rey is, of course, Rey Kenobi or whatever, right? It would be great.
I'm guessing Yoda's granddaughter.
Oh, Yoda's granddaughter. if it wouldn't have been, why does it have to be a dynasty? You know, why can't it just be a regular woman who also happens to? I mean, let's spread the midichlorians out, folks. It'll be fine.
I agree. But there could be a couple more Jedi. There used to be apparently a ton of Jedi.
It used to be.
How come she's not?
It's a recessive gene. Let's have it show up on other planets. That'd be awesome.
That's very true.
But I did thoroughly enjoy it. And if they do have to remake movies, pick other great movies. You know, French Foreign Legion. That was a great movie.
Yeah, I think the
Magnificent Seven. Let's do that one.
Sure. I like to see remakes that are fundamentally different from the originals, and also remakes of movies that I don't already think are great.
Okay, Rock Hudson, Doris Day, Love or Come Back, Star Wars. Let's do it. Let's do that. It'll be Finn and Rey, but there's a misunderstanding, you guys.
Sleepless in Seattle, but Star Wars.
Star Wars, exactly.
They got to meet at the Death Star.
Ferris Bueller. He doesn't want to go to camp or whatever.
You know what? I would actually love to see a teen sex comedy set in the Star Wars universe. I think that's actually kind of a brilliant idea. Like a set, it's like has all the trappings of a teen sex like adventure story. It's like it's the four dudes, they want to get laid, but they're like going from planet to planet. Like maybe it's like a space bachelor party or something like that. I think that'd be like an amazing movie. Sure. I'd love to see that.
I would watch that movie. It's maybe they can make it in the Saga universe. You read Brian K. Vaughan at all? Anyway. Hey, now we are definitely at Jeffrey Golden with a G. G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y. That's Golden. G-O-L-D-E-N. That's his Twitter handle. He has a podcast called 2 Packs a Week, the number 2 on...
Oh, no, the TW. Yeah, TWO.
TWO, number right. 2, right?
If people put the numeral 2, they don't get it.
They don't get it.
Which I hate that.
Oh, and it's on iTunes.
Right.
That algorithm should be able to tell.
I agree.
DevastatorPress.com is the publishing company, and your book, Dream It! Screw It! is rejected Disney attractions.
Yep. And they can get that on Amazon. They can get it in bookstores across the country, indie bookstores. Go to your cool indie bookstore.
And request
ask for
it.
Request it. And
they'll figure it out.
They'll figure it out. And they can also get it at directly at DevastatorPress.com.
Oh, nice. Jeffrey, thank you so much for this weird, awesome insight into Disneyland and Disney World.
Well, thank you so much. This podcast is definitely an e-ticket.
Fast pass. All right, Rangers. Thanks for listening.
Hat.
You know the rules.
You're
out
dancing
there.
Around. My hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?